This is an Envoice Media podcast.
All marketing is messaging plus or times targeting versus targeting. You show the most beautiful, perfect advertisement and it goes to the wrong person. Like, nothing's going to happen.
Yeah.
One of the best things you potentially do is develop those charismatic skills.
You're listening to Manipulation Games Psychology and Marketing Podcast with your hosts, Gene and Darren.
Welcome to Manipulation Games Psychology and Marketing Podcast. I'm Darren with our marketing expert, Gene.
Hi.
How's it going?
It's good.
Well, I loved our last episode. It was very interesting. This is going to be one of the most important topics that you're going to learn. You know, it's basically, you know, what is the true value of your marketing, right?
Right, and placements and targeting.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. It was very fascinating. But, you know, I think it's one of those things where it's good for us to kind of lay out the basics, I guess, of marketing, but they're not really that basic because they're so relevant.
Yeah.
And I feel like people sometimes just need to hear, you know, the very basic fundamentals of marketing to just kind of understand how things work, you know? And so I think it was a great episode.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I mean, probably, like I mentioned in the last episode, the majority of stuff we're going to talk about, the fun stuff we talk about in marketing, is about messaging, right? So if you think about all marketing is messaging plus or times targeting or versus targeting, right? The majority of the stuff we talk about that's fun in advertising is like, oh, the pretty picture. Like, oh, what are the words you're going to use? That kind of thing.
Yeah.
But really, at the end of the day, as much as we like to think that, oh, we can create the prettiest picture, the prettiest words or whatever it is, if you show, you know, a terrible advertisement to the right person, it can still convert, right? But if you can show the most beautiful, perfect advertisement and it goes to the wrong person, like nothing's going to happen.
Yeah.
And so the major aspects of the battle is this targeting, this kind of data nerd kind of stuff. And that's where you tend to find success. Having good messaging supercharges whatever you're doing, right?
So let me ask you this. Are we going to have fun today?
I hope so. I don't know. No, I have some cool stuff we're going to talk about. And I think this episode particularly, remember we were talking about formulas and giving people formulas?
Oh,
I think there's going to be a lot of formulas.
Okay.
In terms of little like games to play around when you're coming up with words.
Oh, games when you play around with words. And I like the word formula, by the way, because it kind of makes me think about like magic spells.
Yeah.
You know, like a brew or creating a formula to like kind of get people to like buy our stuff or listen to our podcast.
Yeah. So so the main kind of topic of today's podcast is going to be copywriting.
Oh, okay.
Which, again, I guess if you work in advertising, you know what copywriting is.
Yeah. And just to clarify, it's not like copywriting like copyrights, right?
Like copyrights like intellectual property.
Yeah, yeah.
It's different. It's basically copywriting. It's a historical term that's just still stuck around where once upon a time when you would write words that would go onto a page, that would be printed onto a page, it would be copied.
Mm-hmm.
That's copywriting.
Mm.
And so it's the idea of writing words that are going to be reproduced over and over again through a printer.
So that's why they call it copy.
Yeah, it's copy.
I didn't even understand that. I didn't even get that.
Again, it's really, right, it's like very old school, right? And so the people who, for example, work on Madison Avenue, right? If you ever watch Mad Men, are copywriters, right?
Makes so much sense.
Don Draper's apprentice, the one who kind of rose through the ranks throughout the Mad Men. She was a copywriter.
Uh-huh.
He was also a copywriter, but eventually he was a creative director who was sort of managing the creatives. The people come up with the words, with the ideas of the campaigns, are the copywriters.
So it's like you need to think of it like this way, right? You're writing a message that you're going to copy millions of times to distribute to millions of people.
Exactly.
So it's mass copywriting.
Exactly. And so like we were saying, marketing at the end of the day, or mass influence, is, you know, it's like taking what you do as you walk door to door, knocking on doors, right? Mm-hmm. But you're doing it on a mass level. So minor little tweaks in words, minor little changes in mood and tone of what you write can have massive effects because it's showing up for millions of people.
Mm-hmm.
And that can affect, you know, how many people resonate or connect with the message.
Right. Because if you say something a little bit differently or a little off, you know, that little tiny change or mood can affect millions of people.
It can.
It's going to be, and that makes sense because, like, you know, there's probably going to be like back in the old days when you print an ad on a magazine, you have to do it probably months in advance, and you have to like make sure you're going to spend, you know, write the perfect copy because you're going to be spending hundreds and thousands of dollars potentially
exactly.
to show to millions and millions of people. And if you don't write the right message or optimize it perfectly, you're just going to be wasting all this opportunity.
Yeah, and there's a lot of details that kind of go into it. Like even small things like whether you put a period or a question mark. Question marks have like sometimes have magical effects in certain situations, uh-huh. right? The ability to be brief, right? Uh-huh. Yeah, like it took them a while to come up with Just Do It for Nike.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a copywriter who eventually came up with that. Like that's what their job yeah, is figuring yeah. out like what is the slogan? What is the short little bit? Uh-huh. And in some ways, like what copywriters do is it's magical, right? Mm-hmm. And so one of the titles that I was kind of playing around for today's podcast is this concept of, you know, words that bend reality.
Hmm.
Right.
I love it.
And it's important to kind of think about it. So like, a good friend of mine once was, you know, was telling me about how in Plato's Republic, uh-huh. Which is kind of Plato's kind of writing about his ideas on government. Uh-huh. One of the things he sort of put forward is this idea that the most dangerous people in society are the poets. Ooh. Because the poets are the ones who could bend reality with their words.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And so Plato was very much against the poets. Again, if you think about it, they're the people, they're like the con artists of society
His mind, that's right? Crazy. Yeah.
And so if you think about the poets as uh-huh. essentially kind of the artists, copywriters, advertisers of their time, uh-huh. where, you know, Homer, who was uh-huh. a poet, would be a person who would walk from town to town and sing the Odyssey,
oh.
right? So back then, you didn't have multimedia, visual, movies, songs kind of thing, uh-huh. but essentially all those art forms uh-huh. are descendants of that initial thing where people would be around the fire
wow.
and someone would recite words,
yeah.
and those words, that oration could potentially bend people's reality.
So they're basically kind of like magicians of words,
yeah.
and they're casting spells by their melodies and their catchy like imagery and things that they would plant in people's heads. As opposed to like, you know, philosophers just or historians who just wanted to just tell you the facts.
Well, they're trying to find truth. Yeah,
they're
philosophers
the
seeking for truth.
Yeah.
And so from that perspective, if you think about it, the poets, right, the ones who can bend reality of the words, right, you know, the most extreme version of it, like we potentially see in today's society, it would be like cult leaders, right?
Mm.
Or maybe a rung lower than that would be politicians, right? PR experts.
Mm-hmm, very
the people who are able to spin and use words to literally shift people's reality, the way they think about things, how you frame things.
And reality itself, because people's yeah. perception, you know, there's that phrase, perception is reality.
Yeah, and like one example I can kind of bring up that there's a really wonderful book. It's called Words That Work, and it's written by one of the major kind of PR strategists for the Republican Party, who did a lot of things. He coined a lot of things, and one of the like most powerful things he coined, if you think about it, regardless you know of which way you think about on the abortion question, right? Mm. He helped coin the word pro-life.
Oh, brilliant, genius!
They think about it, right?
Yeah.
So obviously, there's pro-choice and there's pro-life, right?
Uh-huh.
But if it was anti-abortion, uh-huh. it wouldn't be as strong of a message as pro-life.
That's a perfect example of
that literally shifts people's
shifting.
Relationship. With that topic.
By literally flipping the same kind of phrase, but backwards. So it's instead of a negative, it's a positive.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm pro-life. Like,
yeah.
Or I'm not saying I'm not pro-life. I am pro-life.
Everyone's pro-life,
but,
right?
But yeah, but in the day, like, yeah, like, wait, like, you know,
right.
How can you not be pro-life,
yeah.
right? From a marketing standpoint, right?
Yeah.
With the ability, you literally shift the conversation topic
uh-huh.
by being able to,
you know,
manage words.
You know,
that
makes a lot of sense too. For in politics, you know, you have all these bills that pass, and they always have these poetic kind of titles to, you know, anti like or like pro like anti hunger,
yeah.
you know, bill. You know, like something so silly. Like, oh, we don't want people to starve or be hungry, so let's pass this bill. But there's so much of this poetic language now in politics,
right? Yeah,
which is kind of scary.
It is, and this is what Plato. Kind of talks about. And one of the topics we're definitely going to get into, mm-hmm. I think in the future, and I'm just going to kind of seed this here now, is I find that, I generally find that charismatic people can be very, very dangerous. Because people who tend to develop charismatic skills usually tend to develop charismatic skills for reasons of like potentially trauma. They've gone through very difficult situations. It's like a survival mechanism. A lot of times they're developing these skills to use people, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of normal, well-adjusted people never bother to develop charismatic skills, or not to at least that level of like very powerful level, right?
Yeah.
And I think one of the most important things that people can do if you want a better society, because poetry and the ability to bend reality with your words, it's not going anywhere, right? But if you are somebody who feels like you could do better and help the world, one of the best things you could potentially do is develop those charismatic skills. Right? You know, because, a lot of times people who are coming out of very traumatic situations, like, you know, there's like, for example, this narcissistic personality disorder, right? A lot of times those are the kinds of people end up becoming like cult leaders, right?
Right.
Because they have this deep like pain inside and they're just trying to feed it with love and attention from people. So they get really good at gaining love and attention from people.
See, that's so fascinating, right? But it's so true. You know, like, again, like politicians or cult leaders,
right?
You know, how do they become so manipulative or how? Because they have to, it's like a defense mechanism.
Right,
it is. They probably had a lot of trauma growing up from whatever parents or things that happened to them where they had to develop a way to talk themselves out of situations.
Exactly, yeah.
Right? And so they developed all these skills. And then, you know, so now you have people who are in charge of our government or...
Potentially, you know, yeah. I'm not saying all of them, but there's a tendency that it's heading in that direction. Even like when you're talking about like the trauma thing where... sometimes children coming out of traumatic abusive homes, right, develop an ability to read people's facial expressions to a higher level because that allows them to potentially know what's going on and maybe an abusive father, he's angry now and I don't want to be hit. So I need to, so they get a lot more attuned to those things. And as they go through life, their ability to, for example, read people's facial expressions at a higher level than average, allows them to be more manipulative, more influential in their situations.
Yeah.
And so that's a topic that I think we're going to go into. And one of, I guess, my missions, I think, with this is that I think the more people that are armed with these kind of charismatic skills, right, especially the people who don't develop it kind of naturally because you don't really need to manipulate people most of the time. If you're like, you know, if you're coming from like a good place, you know, you're a kind person with good intentions. But I think it is very important for people to develop that to be able to then move the world forward in a good direction.
Well, there you go. So someone might be listening right now.
Oh, I mean, I don't know. So that's one of the directions I think we're heading. All right. So words have been reality. So Plato established the idea that, you know, he thinks that, you know, poets are dangerous. Again, poetry in his sense, or poets, people manipulate reality with art and words, and it's not going anywhere. We're gonna have politicians, PR experts, all that kind of thing, advertisers. And so I think it's good to try to potentially arm yourself with these skills and learn how these things work. And so I guess we'll start with a couple of things. So there's two axioms that I bring up a lot, and I remember the very first conversation we had about marketing, it comes up. And these things are actually also like, I have like a little like watermark in my resume with these axioms,
okay,
like in super light characters. So if you like look into them,
because
these things are like a core of at least the way I think about advertising, and it's a great way of double checking your work.
Okay,
so the first axiom, and I'm pretty sure I got these some time ago from a very influential thinker and marketer named Eben Pagan. And the first axiom is, if you're marketing to everybody, you're marketing to nobody.
Yeah,
right. So that's talk about this a lot, right? Is that the more specific you are to a particular person's experience, right? The more that message will resonate. The words that you are putting out are going to connect to that person.
Yeah.
We as people are experiencing thousands and thousands of bits of stimuli at every moment in time, right? And our brain is very good at filtering out things that are not relevant to us and very good at catching on to things that are relevant to us.
Yeah.
So if you create a message that is very specific to a particular group of people, right, and they see themselves in that message, their brain is going to tune in and be like, "Oh, this is for me."
Yeah, and this is actually, you know, more important now, again, with algorithms and an amount of attention that people have in terms of being bombarded with, you know, 100 thumbnails on a screen when you're scrolling by. For example, if you're on YouTube, you know, you're competing against all these other messages. And if you don't stand out and speak to that one person who's extremely passionate about that one topic that you're talking about, mm-hmm. like, you're not going to get a click, you know? So you're not going to feed the algorithm. It's not going to, you're just going to just disappear. Your message, your ad, your video, it's just going to disappear in a sea of, like, with everyone else.
You know? You'll be part of the noise.
Yeah, you'll just marketing to everybody, which is nobody.
You're marketing to nobody.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's one of the most important things to ask yourself as you're working on a product, right, is who are you marketing towards, mm-hmm. right? My first job after college, I ended up at this electronics firm. Mm-hmm. And they would do, they were kind of at the forefront of digital signage at that mm-hmm. point in time, where basically mm-hmm. you're trying to replace things like, you know, posters and menus on the walls with digital screens that can mm-hmm. be updated and shift over time. Mm-hmm. And they had, for example, they had these machines, the digital signage, like they could do, it could be for airports, it could be for concert venues, movie theaters, restaurants, that kind of thing, right? This machine kind of did everything. It's like a box, right? Mm-hmm. And so one of the first things and my first coups at that company is I told them, like, I can't sell this. It does everything. Right? I just can't. I'm sorry. I can't do this. And so I literally told them, okay, just take the box, right? And the first thing we did is we took the box. It's the same box. And we said, Digi Menu Pro. And we created a box for restaurants. We're actually pitching Fatburger back then.
What?
Way back when.
So you had a product that could do everything.
Yeah.
But you can't market to everybody. So, yeah, so you narrowed it down literally to a specific industry.
Right. So basically, because that you don't want to have people jump from this idea of like, this thing can do everything, but it's going to do this one thing. They want the solution for them, which is like, you don't want to switch out your menus at your restaurant all the time, especially if you want them to be dynamic and you want to be able to have specials and kind of thing. And it literally was the same box. It had all the features and functions in it. And we just said, like, just don't tell them about the other features and functions, because we're trying to sell a specific solution to a specific problem.
That's hilarious.
For people.
That's so funny. So it's like, this is marketing where it's like, you just had the same product. You just changed the box, the label on the box.
Yeah.
And it literally changed the entire campaign, marketing, the business.
It bent reality
bent
for people.
Reality.
For people, right? Is the fact that you've connected the dots for people of what this is going to do in their life.
Yeah.
Now, and you could do that multiple times. You could have the same box, right? And then you could, again, expand to airports, music venue, concert, like movie. Like, but it's just the thing that they're looking for the solution to their unique problem.
You know, this makes so much sense. Like, this also applies, for example, to, like, you know, nutraceuticals, right?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Just, you know, there's just vitamins at the end of the day. You know, it's probably the same ingredients as everything else. But, you know, this specific bottle of pills or of vitamins, you know, cure some specific ailment. You know, but it's just words. You're literally bending the reality of the same product, right, mm-hmm. that has a certain vitamin, and you're making that person... like, oh, wow, this is going to cure me. You know, this is going to cure, you know, my prostate, for example. Like,
right. And so,
you know, but it could be the same ingredients that everything else has.
It could be, again, there's a lot of the vitamins and nutrients that are good for you are, you know, universal, right? There's certain things like vitamin D, like, should be probably in any multivitamin, right? And so just being able to take something, right, and, like, for example, have the distinction, this is for men. Of a certain age, and this is for women of a different age, allows a person to realize, okay, this feels like it's for me. And you can make minor differences for the product for people, but being able to connect that this is for them.
Yeah.
And then the additional thing, and this is probably maybe a little bit too crazy to go into, but one of the things you're constantly fighting in the world of medicine and neuroscience, whatever it is the placebo effect, right? The fact that people, if they believe something is going to work, right? Somehow, again, we still don't really understand this mechanism, but belief can affect the results of medicines.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
yeah. And so a lot of times there's this crazy thing that's been happening where even the sugar pills that they give people as placebos in studies, because over time people's belief in modern medicine has become so strong, even the placebo pills are getting people results, and then the real medicine is having trouble getting enough of a difference to be able to get past, to be able to show significant difference to be able to get past, you know, trials, right? And so, whenever you have your product, you know, you could be starting off with a product that could be good for everybody, potentially. Whether it's a nutraceutical, it could be a machine that does digital menus, it could be a computer that does everything, right? But the, be able to make it very specific to a particular group of people and the problems and the solutions they're trying to deal with will allow you to rise above the noise, right? And for people to connect to it. And then even on the level of potential like nutraceuticals, the belief that the product is going to work for you, strange enough, also somehow supports a lot of things that happen in terms of medicine. Placebo effect is a, is a real thing that exists that we still don't fully understand. But people's belief and certainty that something is going to help them somehow changes clinical results. So
I like how you immediately can, you, if you have a product, right, and you can just split it up between men and women. That's just the way.
Like, well, that's the first easiest one,
the
right?
The first easiest one, but that's such a good example.
And then age.
And age, right? But then the more you narrow it down, you kind of like splitting a group of people. You know, it seems counterintuitive, but you're actually, you know, marketing the product way more focused, right? And you're going to get more results from
because,
just
because you'll have that more resonance. It's very much akin to, you know, those like stage psychics, right? It's like, is there anybody in this room that has a relative who died in the Vietnam War? And then somebody in the audience is like, wait.
That's me, right?
And then all of a sudden, like for everybody else, that thing won't resonate. But for the one person who that experience, to be like, how do you know?
It's a profound experience.
It's a profound experience.
It's like magic. So you're trying to get that kind of psychic experience, right, of a mentalist predicting what your whatever your ailment that you have. And you like the word you said, it resonates. So it
resonates
their core of like, that's me. And that's where the magic really happens.
Yeah.
That spell.
That's really what it comes down to. So as the kind of the first axiom to double check your work when you are trying to compose words that will bend people's reality, that will be able to affect people, influence people, shift their behavior. If you're marketing to everybody, you're marketing to nobody. So being the more specific you can get to it, the more powerful that message will be to the person who that actually applies to.
See, I've heard that phrase before, but I didn't really think about it of like, what it actually meant is the reason behind that is you just really want to make that person believe that you're speaking to them directly. And that's just powerful impact on our psyche where we will pay attention and believe everything that you have to say after, you know, you know what I mean? Because if someone tells me everything about my life and I've never met them and I think, oh my God, this person's a psychic. And then whatever he tells me after that, I'll probably believe him.
So this is a good segue to the axiom number two.
Okay.
And this is, again, I think this came my way via Eben Pagan, but I think it's originally Frank Kern. Frank Kern is a very famous copywriter who does a lot of these big internet campaigns, those email campaigns that go out and make millions of dollars for people. And there's a line he has, if you can describe somebody's problem to them better than they can, they automatically and unconsciously assume you are the solution.
That's so good.
So if you can describe somebody's experience, their problem, the thing they're going through to them better than even they can like describe it to themselves, like you don't even have to get to the point of explaining the solution. They somehow automatically and consciously assume you already, you know the solution. If you're talking about this thing.
I love this because this when I hear that, the first thing I think of are infomercials. In the first 30 seconds of an infomercial, they don't even tell you the solution, right? They just describe and show you in black and white all the problems that you're going through right now. Like in the kitchen, you can't flip an egg, you know, your yolk is breaking, you know, your spatula, you see a woman in the kitchen just scrambling around trying to like flip an egg and she can't, and she's like sad and her kids are crying, and there's a mom at home going, oh my God, I go through that same problem too, like, you know, like kids are crying because, you know, I can't make them breakfast, you know, or it's like, I don't have enough time in my day. And all you do is just, you just kind of connect with people, right, where you're watching this and you're, it's that psychic effect again, right?
That
people are experiencing this And the key word that you said, it's automatic and subconscious.
Yeah.
You don't even realize you're doing it, but people will automatically and subconsciously assume that you know all the answers after you just described the problems.
So like, yeah, as the infomercials are masters at this. So like when they go through that thing, and if they tell people a story about, you know, like somebody who's like, maybe you're like a young kid in high school, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe you're having serious skin problems, right? Mm. And essentially, because you have serious skin problems, you're starting to have confidence issues. You're worried about getting your prom date.
Yeah.
One of the most important moments in like a lot of young people's life is their prom date, right? And chances are, I mean, really at the end of the day, maybe the skin problem is not really the issue, but if it's something that weighs down on your head, maybe it does affect the way you behave in life, and then essentially is something that's pulling you back. And so if you can describe that situation to a person who's going through that, and you're like, I am going through that situation, right? And all of a sudden, like, you provide them, you know, I don't know, what's the famous, like, infomercial acne medicine? But anyway, like, that kind of thing, right?
That's,
you know,
proactive,
yeah, right? Yeah. Like, you provide this thing, all of a sudden, like, oh, wow, yeah. You know, like, I need to get that taken care of, right? Like, this is a thing that, like, connects to. So it's the ability to not just talk about the product, not just talk about a solution, but be able to talk about all the consequences of the context that's around it. That is what makes something very, like, magnetic and resonant in the message. I remember there was an exercise, I think, again, this is Eben Pagan was doing this conference, and he's teaching people. I think he brought somebody up, and it's something to do with a fat loss situation. And they were focusing on women, and they're providing some sort of fat loss solution to women. And they were trying to do some copywriting for this situation. And what was it? Eben started talking to the person who he was consulting for, like who are the people in the lives of the woman you're trying to present this fat loss product to? And like, so it's the husband, right? Mm-hmm. And they started kind of going through this whole thing where they started going through all the different people, and you start realizing, like, oh, like, well, she can't lose that final, whatever, 20 pounds of weight that it's, and she's worried, she's having confidence issues because she doesn't lose that weight, her husband might not love her or be attracted to her the same way anymore. And then plus her husband is at work, right? And there's that girl who works in the office, like this secretary, right? And she's this young, hot thing coming straight out of college, right? And like, you know, like, you're now getting to these, all these little irrational stories we tell ourselves about jealousy kind of thing. And at the end of the day, I think they came up with some sort of line. It was along the lines, you know, like, you know, get off the treadmill, you know, lose that last 15 pounds so you can get into that little black dress and your husband will never look at that skank at the office again or something. Like, they were able to, again, you project yourself into the situation of people's lives.
Yeah.
Right. Basically, it's the same thing like writers have to do very well.
Yeah.
Figure out what are the relationships and what are the consequences of whatever this thing you're trying to tackle, these people tackle is. And because at the end of the day, the solution, the weight loss, right? Nobody really wants to lose weight. Mm-hmm. People want to be attractive to their partner, right? Mm-hmm. People want to be admired by their social circle. Mm-hmm. People want to be able to walk down the beach and have people look at them and be proud, right? So those are the consequences or the things that come out of the solution, right?
Yeah, I love it because, again, like going back to how we're targeting a specific audience, the housewife, women, a housewife. Yeah. And once you know who you're targeting, then you have to put them in their shoes, like you say, so then you can then think of all the anxieties that they have, you know, being at home, you know, they're wondering if their husband doesn't love them or what they can do to lose weight. But you're not even telling them what the solution. You need to find who you're messaging towards so you can actually figure out, describe all the problems and anxieties they're going through. So then you can actually then provide this magical kind of solution to
them. Yeah, you potentially could get them to take action, right?
Yeah.
And again, a lot of the stuff we're talking about, it's kind of like the dark arts, right? This is manipulation games.
The spells.
Right. These are spells. Uh-huh. But let's say if you are trying to help people, like, for example, get healthier, right? Uh-huh. Yeah, you can go around telling people, like, oh, like, being healthy is good for you, right?
Yeah.
This is what I'm saying. You sometimes need to arm yourself with the dark arts. to be able to get people to take action.
Right. Find who they are.
You know, especially the people with good intentions.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, we can use this for good, this power for good, you know, or to sell your product, you know, like,
well, hopefully your product does good. Hopefully your product is actually is the solution. And in that case, you know, you're using kind of the dark arts to actually make, you know, people take action, right? Shift people's behavior in a way that's beneficial to them and beneficial to you as well as a business person, as a marketer, as an advertiser.
Yeah. I mean, I love it. You know, again, it's just, for me, the biggest takeaway for me, like learning about marketing to a specific person is that, you know, if you know who that person is, then again, you can figure out everything, you know, what they're thinking, right? In terms of like what their day is like, okay, so all the problems that they're going to go through during the day, and then literally just, you can have any product, but if you know the person you're targeting, then you can sell them that solution. So it's just so basic, but it's so profound. It's so simple, but it's like probably the most powerful thing you can probably do.
It is
as a marketer.
And really, what ends up happening, good copywriting, as you sort of see it, eventually just becomes storytelling.
Mm, yeah.
You become a very effective storyteller.
Yeah.
In the sense, by describing people's situation back to them, so they're like, oh, this is for me. Then they're able to tune into the story, and then you can essentially, through maybe like a customer avatar within your story, show them the path, show them the way forward.
I think that would be a really great exercise for people like listening. Say, for example, you're marketing a product, right? Pick four different types of segments of people, right? Mm-hmm. That this product could probably, you know, target or buy, and then kind of describe all of their problems and put yourself in each of their shoes and create a marketing campaign specific for those group of people for the same exact product.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because then that'll really get people to really think about like, okay, there's multiple ways to send this message, right? But it's because it's the same product, but you're focusing and you're kind of manipulating the message and the spell that will affect those specific people where you're marketing to that person. And that's such a fundamental thing in marketing that people need to understand.
You got it.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. And the other one that I would probably put into, if you're doing that kind of exercise, the relationships in the person's life.
Mm, okay.
Because a big factor for a lot of people is their relationships in their life and how something would affect those relationships.
Like other people?
Like other people. So, for example, husbands, wives, children, you know, for example, you're trying to help somebody be healthier, right? So they can extend their lifespan 10, 20 years because they want to be able to watch their grandchild graduate high school, right? Yeah. I mean, that's really at the end of the day. Like, yeah, you can live, it's nice to live 10, 20 years, but the thing that makes it matter is being able to watch your grandchild graduate high school.
And you're tugging at the emotions again.
Well, again, you're connecting meaning to it, right? So all of a sudden it matters.
Yeah, so. And again, back to one of our previous episodes where we learned people make decisions based off of emotions.
And then justify
logic.
You're
connecting everything together.
It's all connecting together.
It's amazing.
All right, so the two axioms that I use to double-check my work usually is that if you're marketing to everybody, you're marketing to nobody. Mm-hmm. And if you can describe somebody's problem to them better than they can, they automatically and unconsciously assume you are or you know the solution.
I feel like I could just take those two rules and just like start my own marketing company right now. Like, it's so basic and simple, but they're so powerful.
Literally use that every single day. Every single day.
Every day.
Every day.
Wow.
You know, it's like every day you use that to double check your work.
I want to go start some marketing campaigns right now.
Yeah.
Like just go out there and like take those two rules and just kill it.
Yeah. No.
Amazing.
Especially if you have that, if you have a kind of a natural talent for projecting yourself into people's reality.
Yeah.
Right? Because again, a lot of the time, the empathy, right, as we define it, is our ability to put ourselves in other people's shoes and be able to imagine what their reality is. Whether or not our imagining is truly real or not, who knows, right? But it's our ability to kind of look at a situation and be like, oh, that person is sad. Mm. And they're sad probably because these actions that happen around them, that, you know, whatever it is. And so you realize, okay, maybe something about the situation needs to change to be able to improve that person's mood, right? So mm-hmm. that's the ability, that's what empathy is. Mm-hmm. And so using these two axioms, and if you have the ability to kind of feel empathy, which a lot of times artists and musicians and creative people, and that's why they end up in advertising, is because they have that more advanced empathy skills.
Yeah, that's
or ability,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and if anyone's listening and they feel like, oh, hey, that's me. I have really good empathy skills. You know, we're talking, it resonates with you. Maybe you should get into marketing. Maybe you're going to be the next marketing genius.
Maybe. Or again, like, you know, whatever you do, whatever the ventures you have in your life, mm-hmm. it's useful to be able to influence people around you, to be able to supercharge your message, right?
Yeah.
So all these things, you know, play the manipulation games. whether you end up becoming a marketer or advertiser uh-huh. or you do something completely different in your life.
Or, you know,
helping the world. Maybe you're a lawyer defending somebody, right? Uh-huh. Manipulation games, influence. Yeah. It's all that stuff that kind of comes into play. All right. So let's, the formulas.
Okay, the formulas. Let's
all right. Get into so, this. Some formulas, right? So these are the games to play while writing. Mm. And so these are different ones because different people have had different ideas over time. But they all seem to circle around kind of similar ideas. And you find the ones that you like and you use them. So the OG, the original, Aristotle.
Okay.
Aristotle.
Okay.
So he had a book, Rhetoric, where he talks about how to convince people. Right, which is funny because I guess
we're going way back.
We're going way back, which is funny because, like, you know, Plato probably would have been not so into this, right? But Aristotle is like, I'm going to write a book about how to convince people, and so this is going way back, and and it still applies today. Uh-huh. And so, logos, pathos, and ethos, which are the terms you use a lot of times. If you go to college and you take a class in rhetorics, this rhetoric it comes up, or I think English class also does it. So, logos is an argument based on logic.
Okay.
Pathos is an argument based on emotion.
Okay.
And ethos is an argument based on authority.
Okay.
All right. Okay. So, as an example, if you're creating a piece of convincing writing, right? Mm-hmm. Like ethos, just an example, is anytime you see somebody wear a white lab coat in a commercial, mm-hmm. that's them appealing to ethos, to authority, mm-hmm. even though it's probably an actor, mm-hmm. right? But mm-hmm. the idea is that we associate white lab coats with competence and doctors and research and whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah.
So, or anytime they mention like, oh, this is formulated by Harvard trained physicians.
Mm, okay.
That kind of thing. So that's ethos. Okay. So, so the reason I bring these things up is, having a combination of all these factors in your messages mm-hmm. is useful.
Yeah.
Right. And you could play certain games with it. For example, on like Google Ads, you have like three headlines and two descriptions, usually for a search ad. Mm-hmm. And you could decide like, okay, one of them is going to be a logos, one of them is going to be ethos, and one of them is going to be a pathos.
Oh.
All right.
So you can categorize your
right. So you'd be ads. Like, well, one of them is like 25 plus years experience, uh-huh. ethos, uh-huh. logos, cheaper than the other guy, pathos, you know, never feel embarrassed about this problem again.
I love it.
All right.
Yeah.
So that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Funny enough, there's a fourth one that Aristotle talks about called uh-huh. kairos,
okay.
which is the timing and the setting of an argument. Uh-huh. And that essentially aligns with what we were talking about with targeting.
Okay.
It's placing an ad or placing a message in front of the person at the right time.
This guy was way ahead of his time.
Yeah, well, I mean, he thought of it. He was a smart guy. He thought about stuff, right?
Imagine if he had like a Facebook or like.
Right.
So, imagine what he could do.
Yeah. So rhetoric, these are the kind of really original ideas, but always playing around with like, okay, so am I using enough? Well, again, like we said, pathos, emotion tends to be the most powerful uh-huh. thing uh-huh. When you're kind of convincing people. Ethos is also very, very powerful. Mm-hmm. Like when, you know, if a police officer comes into the room and tells you like, oh, you need to leave the room, mm-hmm. chances are just the fact that there's a police officer and they're wearing the uniform mm-hmm. as a form of ethos, mm-hmm. you're like, yeah, I'm going to leave the room because there's authority telling me. There's probably a good reason, hopefully.
But it could also play to the emotions too because you might be scared.
Well, yeah, it is. Yeah. So like they're interconnected. Uh-huh. So ethos is a very big factor.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you have the ability to play up the fact that, you know, you are you know, you're like an Olympian and you're teaching like now some sort of sport mm-hmm. through a video class or mm-hmm. something, right? You have a lot of ethos, right? Or all the masterclass, you know, the masterclass series where they, you know, you have directors and artists. Yeah. There's a lot of ethos in terms of what they're as an argument form, right? Because they have a recognized name in their field, so therefore, chances are they probably know what they're talking about.
Yeah,
you know. So pathos, logos, having that combination of things whenever you're doing things. So that's one formula.
Okay, and again, that would be a good exercise for people and marketers out there if you're new or if you're experienced. Yeah. Just kind of categorize all your ads and see which one they fall into. Then you can just kind of probably just you probably have done this so many times you probably immediately know which category.
Yeah, and you try to sometimes have a combination of those.
So you want to have a good mix.
Yeah, I mean, so according to Aristotle, I think he liked to have all three. He thought it was important to have all three.
I see.
Right. Because different people, some people can really, some people like to listen to authority.
Uh-huh.
Right. Some people don't like to listen to authority. Some people are rebels, right?
Yeah.
Some people are get very pulled in by emotional arguments, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or some people are very like logic, data oriented. I am a robot. Uh-huh. I'm going to do this based on just the science, right? So it does help you having these different appeals, you know, maximize it potentially that your chance to be able to convince somebody.
Yeah.
All right. Here's another kind of formula to think about. Attention, emotion, information, action, in that order.
Okay.
All right. So if you can't get somebody's attention, you're done.
Okay.
You're done, right?
Okay.
So,
yeah, that's very important.
If you can't have like an emotional appeal, mm-hmm. if you can't connect,
mm-hmm.
probably, you know, you're also probably done.
Okay.
You could probably skip the information part because that's more like the logos, the logical aspect, but it's good to have it in there.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, the action is the thing you're trying to get a person to actually do, right? So whenever you're writing your stuff, it starts with attention, getting somebody's attention, and you want to make sure you're also very clear, what exactly am I supposed to do right now?
Yeah.
I just got this message.
Yeah.
Am I supposed to click on this link and go fill out a form? What do you want me to do? So don't forget that, right?
Uh-huh.
And so some of the ways to kind of think about it, a lot of times attention, the way you're able to get it is being intriguing, or the simple way is, again, being able to really answer for who the advertisement is right away. So, again, somebody sees themselves in the advertisement. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is for a person just like me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a young kid coming out of college with no skills. Maybe I should take this programming boot camp to be able to actually develop something that will give me money in the future, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, so it's a very targeted type of message, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then the emotion, again, is usually through describing or telling stories or connecting things to relevance or meaning in people's lives, right? So like we're talking about, you want to have a longer lifespan because you want to watch your
grandkid
walking.
Yeah.
So that would be the emotion aspect. Information is where you essentially can make your logical arguments for stuff.
Uh-huh.
And then the final part of the formula, right, is telling people what to do. What's the action? Like what, you know, how does this work? What's the next step? Sign up for the free trial.
Yeah.
Whatever it is. And oftentimes if you're writing an ad like on Facebook or something or whatever it is, and you have the ability to have paragraphs of text, first paragraph attention, second paragraph emotion, third paragraph information, last paragraph action.
And again, I think this is also relevant now, especially on social media. You know, it doesn't even have to be an ad. It could just be your videos. You know, get someone's attention by the title and the thumbnail, right? And make sure that means make sure it's targeted. It's really specific to that person who wants to actually click on it to get their attention, right? So you have their intention, then immediately appeal to their emotions, right? Like, let's come up with a scenario. Okay, you want to solve homelessness, right? So you show a picture of a homeless man in Los Angeles, you know, diving in a trash can, right? And it's like, and the title could be, "Oh, homeless epidemic, you know, is running rampant, you know."
Mm-hmm.
And so you go, "Oh, in Los Angeles." So you click on it. It's very specific. It's in your city. It gets your attention. You click on it. Then you show the emotional side. Oh my God, this person's homeless. He's cold. He's hungry. And like, you know, what can we do about it? Or maybe you incite anger, right? Because these homeless people are there. They're running rampant, you know, in your neighborhood, living, putting tents. So it sends people who, who respond differently to anger, they'll get angry about it. Then you can provide a solution. No, we have this bill.
Yeah.
Right? That, you know, so what can you do? You go call or sign or, you know, vote for this proposition, you know. But that's a really good practical way to approach kind of how you get people's attention, appeal to their emotion, show them the information, and what can they do about it? It's a basic formula. That's a great formula.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm super pumped that you're getting it.
Like, yeah, I mean, it makes so much sense. Well, I mean, I think we all do because we see it every day, whether we realize it or not, that people are bombarding us with all these messages and storytelling of through advertising or through, you know, Facebook posts or Instagram posts or TikTok videos, whatever you call it. They're doing this right now, and it works for a reason. So it's good to understand it.
Yeah. So it's these are formulas or these are ways of double checking your work, right? And these are games you can sort of play to kind of work on structuring your message.
Yeah.
Again, some of the ways that it can come into play. And I, at some point, I want to do an episode with you on this whole attention thing because I feel like some of the work you're doing with a lot of these videos, right? Darren works on it has like a laboratory where he's working on developing like viral videos, right? A lot of it is you're focusing on how do you grab attention?
It's all attention and retention, and they're both very similar.
So at some point, we can talk about what are some of the things that do that well, because again, you can create attention through being very specific to somebody.
Yeah,
you could be like intriguing, cause mystery or something. You could have something that's completely weird and odd and like a non sequitur that like sort of like a person like, oh, how does that work? Like, you want to know that kind of thing. And that would be a really cool topic to dive into.
Yeah, I would love to talk about that.
So another formula, and this is really really basic, because I think we all learned this in school, but I put it in a particular order is. Who, why, what, when, where, and how.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. And the way that kind of plays in for me is the very first question I'm trying to answer is, for who is this thing?
Uh-huh.
Again, it falls in with, if you're marketing to everybody, you're marketing to nobody, it falls in with grabbing a person's attention. So for who is this ad for?
Uh-huh.
Why does it matter to the who? Right. So that's where a lot of the emotion, the problem
gets
played. So identity problem.
Yeah.
And then what is the solution we're offering? Right. That's like what is the solution? Right. And then the when, where, how is essentially the details of the action.
Yeah.
Okay. Like come to my restaurant here at this time.
Yeah.
Yada, yada. Make a reservation this way.
Yeah.
So again, just a way of making sure you're not missing certain things, because I've seen ads where people don't have a call to action at the end, like they forget.
Very basic,
yeah. So there's basically so who, why, what, when, where, and how.
Got it.
And again, it sort of layers on to that whole attention, emotion, information, action.
Yeah.
So whichever formula speaks to you better, use that. A lot of them are kind of circling around the same idea. Okay, so there's this bit, features versus benefits. It's another formula. Mm. And this one comes from David Ogilvy of Ogilvy and Mathers. And he talks about it in his book, Ogilvy on Advertising. And basically what it is, he has a really big focus on when you're advertising, advertisers sometimes only focus on features, not the benefits.
There's a distinction.
There's a distinction. And we've sort of talked about this already. We're just heading it from a different angle. Uh-huh. So the feature would be is that I have a 4K television with insane pixel thing. The benefit is how jealous all my friends are when they come over to watch Super Bowl and you could see every bead of sweat on Tom Brady's face.
I love it. See, I'm just catching myself. I'm probably more on the feature side when I think, because I'm just thinking about all the features, like when I try to promote something. But that's totally true.
Why does it matter?
Yeah, because I feel like the benefits, you can tell a story with the benefits, right?
It's all about the benefits. I remember right now I'm going through one of Ogilvy's books, kind of as a research, right? And there's like an ad in there. It's like, I think it was for piano lessons. It's like, and the headline is, everybody was laughing until I sat down at the piano.
Wow, that's a story right there.
That's a story,
that's
right?
That's a story. That's my imagination.
It's like everybody was laughing until I sat down at the piano.
Wow.
Right. And so that's the why. That's the benefit, right? Yeah, so and you have features. Take your features, right? Like you have an incredible product. You have a digi menu. You have a box that can be a digital menu. Transform the features into actual benefits in the reality of the person you're talking about. So it's another way of another game you could play as you're looking at and your work, and you double check your work.
Yeah.
Don't get stuck on the features. Who cares if it's 4K? Why does it matter that it's 4K?
Right. It's so simple, so basic, but it's such a basic, powerful thing that we can do.
Yeah. All right. Here's a few things to kind of play around with that I think are important when you're writing. So it's easy to write long. It's hard to write short.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the ways this comes up is that don't try to write short. Write long first.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, right now we're doing these long-form podcasts. Mm-hmm. With time, maybe we'll distill it into shorter bits of like really...
Yeah, focused topics.
Very powerful information.
Yeah.
Right? But it's easy to write long, and then you edit it down to find the juice.
I see.
I remember I had a French teacher, Mr. Carpenter, and he was telling us about how novels are like beer, short stories are like wine, and poetry is like hard liquor, right? In terms of the density of like emotional information impact. So
that's funny.
It's easy to write long, hard to write short. So you need to, with time, basically let yourself have the permission to write out lots of ideas, long ideas, right? And then condense it down to find the juice.
See, it's like that piano line. It's so short.
It is,
But it's so perfect because
it's very powerful.
It tells such a long story, but it's such a short form.
Yeah,
it's perfect.
And so what I'm trying to tie in here with this idea is a couple of cool things. So one of them is, have you ever heard of an escalator pitch?
No, what's that?
Okay, so you know about the elevator pitch?
No.
Oh, you don't know about the elevator pitch? Okay, so an elevator pitch, let's say you're like somebody who has like a startup or something or whatever it is, right? An elevator pitch is like you get into an elevator with somebody and the elevator takes like a minute to get between floors. Your ability to condense your argument or whatever it is to tell somebody about who you do, who you are, what you do within whatever, it's usually 30 seconds.
Yeah.
So people like who pitch companies or pitch pitch their products, they develop what they call an elevator pitch.
Yeah.
Which is like a 30-second thing where you work on it. So right away, you get people to understand what the thing
within
is.
Within an elevator. Yes.
Within an elevator. Yes. So it's like it's a famous kind of line.
Uh-huh.
And there's another thing that I came across a while back. It's called an escalator pitch, which is basically you're going up an escalator to somebody going down the other way.
Oh,
and you have about 3 seconds to yell something.
Oh, my God.
At them and get them to understand it.
Yeah.
And the one of the very famous stories about escalator pitches, right? Is I think it was it was in the 70s. When did Jaws come out? It was the 70s, right?
78, 79.
All right.
I think.
So Jaws was considered the first blockbuster movie, the first summer blockbuster.
Okay.
Basically, the kind of this whole formula where we watch now, like we watch Marvel movies every summer.
Yeah, yeah.
Mission Impossible comes out like every summer or something. Yeah. These big movies that make a huge amount of money, have a wide appeal, exciting, energetic, right?
Uh-huh.
So Jaws was considered the first like blockbuster movie.
Interesting.
And then I guess once it came out and it was such a massive success, somebody walked into a studio and they said to the executives, Jaws in space. And that movie was Alien.
Oh, okay. So he condensed it into three words. Not even 3 seconds, three words.
Right. So escalator pitches are very powerful in terms of getting your idea across. And usually what makes an escalator pitch work is the ability to take essentially neurons that already exist in people's minds of understanding and putting them together in a new and novel way where all of a sudden people like they get it.
Mm.
Right. There's probably, I feel like in the app world, it comes up a lot. Everyone's like, oh, we're the new Uber for whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
So your ability to it might take a little while to get your escalator pitch, but if you're able to get that idea down mm-hmm. to the shortest possible thing, mm-hmm. it has such a powerful impact. Mm. And usually, again, it requires connecting two or three ideas together in a new way mm-hmm. that hasn't been really...
That creates that spark.
Right away, and people are like, whoa. Like,
I've never heard that before. It's an immediate response, like Jaws in space.
Jaws in space.
And so, again, we're talking about an escalator going different opposite directions, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that person, you have 3 seconds while he's turns his head, looks at you, and you're screaming these three words, Jaws in space. You get their attention. Uh-huh. Get their emotion and get them excited to take action to make this movie. Yeah. Like, just in three words. That's amazing.
Yeah. And there's a lot of ones with movies. I don't know if these are true, but after the fact makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. It's like Die Hard on a bus.
Speed.
Boom.
See? I immediately got that. It's like, right? It's so funny. You didn't even have to tell me the movie. Right. I immediately...
And
just
so,
like that.
And so that is a very powerful technique to work on.
Yeah.
It might take a while for you to get it down to that short bit of time, but think about the escalator pitch. What is the most streamlined way for you to explain something where people just get it?
Yeah. Man. That's
get it.
That's another great exercise for people listening. Distill your pitch from an elevator to an escalator and see if you can beat Jaws in space with just three words.
Well, I mean, you usually need to have, a relationship between the different things for people to, again, be able to connect it together and get
it. Right. But again, I think that's why how a lot of startups, right? They need to create that one line kind of thing, that they're the unique value proposition, mm-hmm. as they call it, right? That distills what they are and what they do and how they solve whatever problem in like as little amount of space as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But it's important because, you know, when you're in an app store, you only have about this much real estate to state who you are and what you do. And so it's even more important now than ever to distill who you are and what you do and how you're going to solve people's problems.
Yeah. And brevity is very, very powerful, right? Mm-hmm. In the sense that, going back to our episode about glamour, right? Mm-hmm. The unseen. Mm-hmm. Brevity forces the unseen.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a thing I wanted to bring up that's kind of a famous thing. I was kind of looking it up, and it turns out maybe Hemingway did not write this. Okay. But he's famously attributed to writing this thing. But Hemingway at one point in time, I guess, created a challenge of what they call the six-word story. Mm-hmm. And a lot of famous writers have composed six-word stories, and you can look them up, and they're a lot of fun. But the famous one that Hemingway supposedly wrote was, "For sale, baby shoes, never worn."
Oh, that's so sad.
Ryan?
For me... Like, whoa, why weren't they worn? Why are they for sale? What happened to the baby?
Yeah. And so, again, the glamour there is the unseen. You don't know.
Unseen. But I have a story already in my head, and it taps into certain emotion. That's brilliant.
Yeah. Just for fun, I was trying to find some of the other ones. I think, like, Stephen King has one, a bunch of others. There's a famous writer, Margaret Atwood.
Uh-huh.
I think she wrote, the famous show on Hulu. Handmaid's Tale, I think that's her.
Handmaid's Tale, yeah.
I think that's her. Mm-hmm. Her six-word story. Starlet sex scandal. Giant squid involved.
What?
I don't know.
A giant squid?
I don't know. So it's an interesting exercise, right?
It makes you think because it forces you to fill in the blanks where you never would have gone there. I would have never thought of a scandal with a giant squid.
Right. And again, it's kind of doing that same thing with the escalator pitch, right? Uh-huh. Which you're essentially connecting two neurons, two things that are already holding a lot of information and combining them, and all of a sudden it creates something new.
It creates the aha moment.
It creates an aha moment. So the ability to essentially show people targeted details through words combined with the unseen...
Uh-huh.
Force the mind to fill in the rest of the story.
Yeah.
Which ties back to that glamour episode.
Yeah.
So it's essentially, it's kind of the same phenomenon, just with words.
Yeah.
Glamour tends to be mostly visual, but you're able to do the same thing with certain words. Certain words right away evoke an entire world.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's amazing.
So, yeah. And let's just summarize, because we hit a bunch of formulas, right?
You know, last episode we were talking about how many aha moments we have in an episode. I probably had at least about six so far, I think.
Okay.
So I think it was really, let's review all of these ahas that we've discovered.
Yeah. All right. So bending reality with words.
Yeah.
Poets are dangerous, right? So in some ways, we want to arm people with the ability to bend reality with their words, especially the people who have good intentions, because oftentimes the people who don't have good intentions are the ones who develop the greatest ability in the manipulation games.
Yeah.
Right. And with time, I think that's, we should shift that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Two axioms to double check your work in marketing. If you're marketing to everybody, you're marketing to nobody. You're probably going to hear this a million times if you keep listening to us. Thank you for listening. If you describe somebody's problem to them better than they can, they automatically and unconsciously assume you are the solution. Frank Kern, I believe, said that. But Amazing. Again, double check your as a way of double checking your work, describing people's experience to them as if you're psychic, is very resonant in terms of your message. The games we can play while writing. Aristotle came up with logos, pathos, ethos. Logos, logic; pathos, emotion; ethos, appeals to authority and expertise in your field. Attention, emotion, information, action. Who, why, what, when, where, how. Features versus benefits. It's easy to write long, hard to write short. escalator pitch, jaws in space. And again, the unseen, through being able to write a short line that captures a lot of emotion, right?
Yeah.
Poetry is like hard liquor.
Poetry is like hard liquor.
Yeah.
Wow. That was amazing, Gene. Well, thank you. Thank you for distilling all of this information in such a short amount of time, because I feel like we could have gone a long time for each one of these.
I'm sure. And again, it's easy. Topic. It's easy to write long. It's hard to write short.
So right.
Even with the actual podcast, with time, you know, we're exploring these ideas, but finding the most efficient way of like narrowing it down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you guys enjoyed our episode about copywriting. You know, because it's so important. It's very basic, but I feel like we've distilled so many powerful techniques and formulas and magic spells for you guys to go out there and actually use. So tell us, you know. And leave a comment. You can find us on Spotify, Apple, Amazon Music, YouTube. You can watch us and leave a comment and let us know how we're doing.
YouTube, go to YouTube, subscribe.
Yeah, subscribe.
That's why I'm focusing right now.
Feed the algorithm. Say something. Write a comment. Respond. We'll respond to you too. We'd love to hear your feedback and tell us what you thought about this episode and what you guys are doing out there. We'd love to hear it. So thanks again, Gene. I'm Darren. From Manipulation Games, Psychology and Marketing. We'll see you next time.
And Voice Media, voice your passion.